This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The 63rd State House District will have a new representative next year. That was guaranteed when Representative Dave Maturin was defeated in the Republican primary, running for a third term, representing parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. Jen Aniano is the Democrat who is running for state representative in the 63rd District. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, where you're from, etc.
Okay. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and lived there for the first couple years of my life. When my parents divorced, my mom took my brothers and I to Michigan because she had a friend that lived out here. And we wound up on the east side of the state, just outside of Detroit, in like the Warren-Roseville area, which is what most people are familiar with. I went to Cusno High School. That's where I graduated from. That's in Warren. After that, I went to Missouri for college for a year at Missouri Valley on a wrestling and soccer scholarship. I decided I didn't like Missouri too much, so I came back home, got my associate's from Macomb, and then transferred into Eastern. I have a degree in history and a degree in journalism from Eastern. Unfortunately, I graduated when the market crashed, so I decided to go to grad school because there wasn't really much in the way of finding a job for me. And I wound up at U of M in the SMAC program, which is a teaching certification program with a master's degree in education. And that's kind of where I found myself, my teaching job. And I think it was a good fit for me. I think the fates aligned when they put me into teaching. And I've been teaching for almost a decade in Michigan public schools, exclusively in urban education, so in Grand Rapids and in Kalamazoo. And I also have alternative education experience. And I'm working on my doctorate right now in educational leadership.
What would you like to do if you are elected to the State House?
My two biggest concerns right now, of course, education. I live it every day. I see the inequity in our funding system. I see the inequities with our college-going curriculum that Granholm instituted. I believe when she did that, she was trying to do something good, trying to give students something to strive for, but I also believe that by making college the only option for our students, we've devalued trades and labor and skilled jobs. And I really would like to bring skilled labor, agriculture, those types of things back into the high school curriculums, especially secondary curriculum, so that we keep our talent in Michigan and it doesn't leave to go somewhere else. We have plenty of farming opportunities here. We have plenty of skilled labor opportunities here, and we really need to push students in those directions as well and not make them feel like college is their only option. That's my fundamental belief as a teacher in the classroom for the past almost 10 years. And I also believe labor needs some work in this state. I believe right to work is wrong for Michigan. Of course, the recent Supreme Court Janus decision is going to make it difficult to roll back much of right to work, but I believe our right to work standards are much more stringent than what Janus calls for, and we could roll some of that back to really help labor in the state of Michigan. I'm vice president of the Kalamazoo Education Association, and I'm also a delegate to the Michigan Education Association and a delegate to the National Education Association, which gives me sort of a unique look into how laws affect the working class in Michigan and in the United States, and how laws affect labor. And I really feel like we've taken some steps backward in Michigan that are not the right steps for people who are working in this state, trying to put food on the table for their families.
Are you seeing many teachers opt out of being members of their union?
Yes. Kalamazoo Education Association actually is one that has been able to keep many of our teachers in our union. We're very strong together. We're very united. We're sort of a model for the rest of Michigan because we've done so well, but it isn't an easy task. And especially convincing people of the millennial generation and younger. I am a millennial, so I've seen the shift in thinking where people think that unions aren't productive anymore and don't need to exist. But being someone who loves history, I know the value of the labor movement and the value of unions. So it's been sort of difficult to convince younger people, especially of the worth of the union when they have an option not to pay for it anymore. But I think we're going to be able to convince people, especially if we start rolling back some of this legislation, that unions really are good for working class individuals and that they do help and protect us and keep us working.
Do you think there is a place for charter schools in Michigan?
That's a really difficult question. I don't think there's an easy answer to that or one that I can give you wholeheartedly at this point in time. I believe there are some charters who have the right intent, but until we are equitable in our accountability between public schools, charter schools, private schools, I feel like Michigan is the model for what we shouldn't be doing with charters.
How so?
In the United States. Just look at our numbers for how our achievement is going in the state. I am a firm believer that Betsy DeVos is a big part of our problem in Michigan, that her agenda is a big part of our problem in Michigan, that this school choice model that she has is doing damage to our most vulnerable students. We are removing students from schools and putting funding in other schools as opposed to just properly funding the schools that they're already in and making changes in those schools that already exist. And I think the school choice model that Betsy DeVos presents is not the right thing for every single student in the state of Michigan. And we need to take a hard look at the models that we've created for these charter schools at accountability. I'm not against charter schools. I'm against how we've implemented charter schools in the state of Michigan.
Have you looked at another state and seen someone that you think does it better than Michigan or where Michigan should be looking to model itself after?
When I was in grad school, so this is a long time ago, 10 years ago, I was looking into the charter school movement in Chicago. And I feel like maybe there might be some examples in Chicago of charters doing it right. But I'm going to be really honest. I'm not sure that there's a large number of charters in the United States that are doing what needs to be done for all the students in the neighborhoods that they're in. So we have to figure out, funding is a very tricky thing when we talk about education, and money does talk. And funding is extremely important and crucial to the everyday education of all the students in public schools in the state of Michigan and in the United States. So if we're going to remove funding from a school to give it to another school, we really need to have a sound plan for how we're going to do that and how we're still going to help the children who are left behind in those schools that the funding was removed from. And I don't think we have a good plan for that right now. So if we're going to do charters, if that's what the people of Michigan want, we need a sound system of accountability, and we need a sound system of funding that's equitable across the board. And right now, we're just not doing it.
This part of Michigan has been one of the places where PFASs have been found in the water supply, parchment around Battle Creek, which is very close to the 63rd District. If you were in the state house right now, what would you want to do? What sort of legislation might you propose? What sort of things would you want your fellow lawmakers, if you were a state representative, to do regarding PFASs?
You know, I think there's a complicated thing here when we talk about economics and then we talk about water and we talk about how those two things intertwine. I think first and foremost, we live in the state of Michigan, and it's our duty to protect our water, our Great Lakes. I'm very disappointed with some of the things that have occurred as I've been an adult and, you know, have seen politics happen in Michigan, the Nestle water situation, the PFAS situation, Flint. These things are unacceptable. People should have clean water. People should be able to drink the water that they're paying for. And I can understand where some people would say, you know, if you make regulation, that hurts economy. But I believe when it comes to water, regulation is important. And we need to protect the people that are consuming that water. And we need to protect the Great Lakes as the keeper of the Great Lakes, as the state of Michigan. So while I can see there are two sides to that argument, and there are two sides to every argument, I would value protecting the water and giving our citizens clean water over maybe the economic issues with regulations.
In some cases, we're going back, though, where contamination didn't happen yesterday. It might have happened years ago. How much money should the state be sinking into testing and trying to find out where PFOSes may be?
I mean, how much is Flint worth, right? To save 10,000 here or 100,000 here, look what we've done to them. And that's not the right thing to do. So I think it's better to be proactive than reactive. So if it means that we have to pay some money to test water quality and to ensure that our pipes are, you know, where they need to be and that we don't have things happening that are going to contaminate our water, I think it's our responsibility to do that.
We are speaking on Wednesday, the same day that the state has announced an agreement with Enbridge to pursue construction of a tunnel underneath the Straits of Mackinac, where the Enbridge Line 5 oil pipeline would be relocated. Is that a good solution?
We have to do something with Line 5. Is that the correct solution? I'm not going to attest that it is because I haven't seen all the information for that. But something needs to be done. Obviously, you know, it's a ticking time bomb, Line 5. And I've gone to a lot of events and talked to a lot of people. I've gone to a lot of screening and recommendations with labor unions and organizations. And a common theme among those people that I've talked to is we must do something. What that something is, I don't think everybody agrees with, but something has to be done to protect our water, to make sure that Line 5 is not going to turn into a disaster. Is that the right thing to do? I don't know right now. I don't have an answer to that.
Well, of course, what other people will say is shut it down.
I've heard that a lot, yes.
And is that the right way to go?
And I really don't feel comfortable saying 100% I back shutting it down at this point. I really would like to talk to more labor organizations, see what their take is on that. I would like to talk to environmental organizations and see what their take is on that. I would say the environmental side is going to err on shutting it down, whereas we might have some economic groups or labor groups that are going to say don't shut it down. But I find that lately in politics, people can't sit at the table with those that they disagree. And if we can't do that, then we're not going to make any sound or rational decisions because it's going to be so far one way or the other that whatever gets done isn't going to be right for the people of Michigan. So what I would really like to see happen with Line 5 is that people from these opposing groups sit with the politicians in their districts and really give them a sound plan that we can all agree on that will work for everyone. And no, that's not easy. And yes, that's idealistic, but it's what we should be doing. That's what politics is.
Do you think there is a legitimate concern about feeding our energy needs, that if you shut down Line 5, there may not be enough oil, there may not be enough natural gas to satisfy what we need in Michigan?
I don't have the statistics in front of me, so I'm not sure, again, I can answer that question with 100% validity. I find it hard to believe that removing one source of energy would completely destroy Michigan's energy potential. But when you remove a source of energy, we need to talk about what we replace it with. And that needs to be part of the conversation, too. I personally would like to see us move towards more clean energy solutions. But again, there are issues with clean energy solutions as well. Where do you put wind turbines? Where do you, you know, irrigate water? Where do you do this, that, or the other? These are all things that impact the environment. So again, there needs to be some sound discussions with people who don't agree to come to a sound decision, whether that be removing Line 5 and totally revamping some clean energy, whether that means fixing Line 5 and then moving towards clean energy. I'm not really sure what the solution is to that because I have not talked to enough of my constituents about this particular issue, nor have I talked to enough groups that are educated on this issue for me to say 100% one way or the other, I will do this or that. But I firmly believe we all need to sit together to figure this out because one person's view or one side of the aisle is not going to have the right answer for Michigan. It needs to be something that we come together and have a consensus on.
What should the state do about fixing roads?
Good Lord, something. As Gretchen Whitmer says, fix the damn roads, right? I don't know why they're not fixed. I really don't understand it. I moved to Michigan, I think, when I was 6. And I'm pretty sure most of my life, no matter what side of the state I've been living on, the roads have been horrific. I don't know what the solution is to that. I think we need to take a hard look at funding that we have already, things that are, you know, money that's supposed to be going to the roads. Is it going to the roads? Is it being farmed out to other things? I know that there can be back dealing going on with funding. So I would like to see, truthfully, more transparency with that, because I am really not certain why our roads are in the condition that they're in.
Are you open to the idea that there may have to be additional fees? There may have to be some sort of increase in taxes in order to fully fund road repairs and construction of new roads.
I think that if that is seen to be the solution, I would support it. However, I would like for us to take a look at funding that is supposed to be going to roads and make sure that that funding is going there before we decide that we need to add more taxes. I know, especially in my district, more taxes is not a popular view. And I hear that. And if I'm elected, I'm elected to support these people who don't want more taxes. So we, I think, need to take a hard look at where our money is, where it's supposed to be going, if it's going to that place. And if the answers to those questions are yes, it's going where it's supposed to be going, well, then clearly we're not doing enough. So maybe an increase in taxes would be called for. But that's something that we need to take a hard look at before we decide, yes, that's the solution.
Auto insurance rates.
Oh,
Michigan's
boy.
Are awfully high, highest in the nation. Do you have an idea on how to fix that?
Interestingly enough, my students and I just had a conversation about this today, my senior students. I like no fault in the fact that, God forbid if I ever got into a situation where I was catastrophically injured in an accident, my burden wouldn't be on my family financially. I really appreciate that part of the no-fault insurance. But I've heard, just canvassing a lot of people in my district, even the Democrats, who I think a lot of Democrats would say they support the idea of no-fault, having talked to them, but they don't support the idea of how much money insurance costs. So what I hear people saying is no-fault can be a good thing, but we might need some reform with no-fault because auto insurance rates are just not something that many people can afford. It's hurting them. And I know even in Detroit right now, there are a lot of people driving without insurance because the rates in Detroit are so high. And if we look at Detroit and how there could be a vulnerable population of people in Detroit who are just working to get by, and then you add these outrageous insurance rates on them, how are they supposed to choose between feeding their family and car insurance? Obviously, they're going to feed their family. So I do believe no fault is a good thing, but the cost of no fault is not a good thing for a lot of Michigan families. And I think this is something that both Republicans and Democrats really need to come together on too, because this is something that affects everyone, not just Republicans, not just Democrats. The middle class is shrinking. It's getting harder and harder every day to put a roof over your kid's head, put food on the table. I think we need to look at these things that people are having to choose in between and see if there's a better solution for what we're doing, because people are hurting. And I know they are, because I'm a public servant. I don't make a ton of money. I know what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck and just hope that you're going to pay your bills and be able to eat that week. So I hear that. I hear the people that have some concerns with that. And I think there's something that we need to do with it.
Well, would reform perhaps be, and this is one idea that's been thrown out, giving people the option of getting car insurance that does not include the lifetime benefits for injuries suffered in a catastrophic accident.
And I think is the criticism to that, that it would then make it even more expensive for people to have it? I feel like that would
be... The people
be,
who do opt yeah, for it would then end up paying
more
because you've got to come up with the money from somewhere.
You know, and that, I mean, this is even like the healthcare debate, right? Do we go to single payer? Do we, you know, Medicaid for all, Medicare for all? Do we give people part insurance and then have them opt in to pay more? And I don't know if that's the right solution. I think we really, on this issue, need to talk to our constituents before we make decisions in the legislature. And I'm not sure, you know, that my elected officials have asked all that much for my input. As a union member and a labor leader, I often opt into politics. We write letters, we make phone calls, we canvass for politicians. But I'm not certain that many politicians in the state of Michigan are really asking people that they represent these questions. And that's kind of the biggest thing that I think if I were elected needs to happen. it's not really what I think about, you know, no fault or healthcare. What do the people I'm elected to represent think about that? And then how can I formulate some logical opinions and ideas to support what these people think is right? Of course, my ideology plays a role. Of course, my opinion plays a role. But it is really about listening to the people that you're elected to represent.
Well, does that mean this is a fairly binary choice here? That either we go ahead and we continue where we are going, which means auto insurance rates stay high, or we say that catastrophic injuries, they're going to have some sort of cap on them. We're not going to go lifetime. I mean, is it that simple?
Is it simple? No.
Is the choice that simple?
Are those our two options? Probably. I mean, or like you said, buying into it if you want to and not buying into it if you don't want to. I mean, I think those are probably three options we have there. I'm not sure if we have many other options than that. I think if it keeps going the way it's going, the indicators are that our insurance is going to keep skyrocketing because that's what insurance does. And I'm not sure, you know, are there some maybe regulations on insurance companies? I haven't looked at any studies for how much of this we're paying is actually going to catastrophic injuries, how much of it is going into the pockets of the people that run the insurance company. You know, I think there are a lot of things we need to look at with that too. Maybe there is some regulation we need to put on insurance companies for the amount of money they can take when they have plans for catastrophic injuries. I think that's also an option we need to address.
You've mentioned, people struggling with wages. You mentioned healthcare in that answer as well. Do you have some basic ideas on what to do to help the middle class and ensure that people do get health care?
So I am fortunate in that I'm a public servant, but there have been, even in the decade that I have been working as a public servant, I went from paying very, very small amounts of money for my insurance back in like 2009. To now, I'm paying $150 or something like that, a paycheck. Please don't quote me on that. I don't have my paycheck in front of me. But, you know, my payment is $150 a paycheck, so $300 a month plus an obscene high deductible.
Is that just for you, or is there someone else?
I'm married, so my husband's on the plan as well. And even when he wasn't on the plan, I was paying $60 a month or $60 a paycheck, $120 a month or something like that. Last year, because I just got married. So there's clearly a trend here where insurance is becoming very expensive. And I have very good insurance because I'm a public servant. But the point is, it's becoming so costly that I don't know if 10 years from now, I'm going to be able to afford whatever increase they give me each year. I'm not sure that single payer is our only option. I think some people in the Democratic Party would say that single payer is the way to go, and I respect their opinion. I need more education on single payer and how it would work before I could say I'm 1,000% behind single payer. I feel like there are some ways in the middle we could meet. I'm not a supporter of the Medicaid work requirement. I don't like it. I think that's really putting people out who already are struggling to get by. And let's be real, minimum wage is not going to buy you health insurance and a roof and feeding your family and transportation, because let's be real, the transportation infrastructure we have for a public transportation system all over the state is not great. So the expectation is that you should own a vehicle so that you can drive back and forth to work every day. So if insurance rates are so high and minimum wage isn't covering that, and then we have healthcare expenses and healthcare insurance expenses, and there are all these things that people have to pay for just to get by, that we really should be taking a hard look at. And even if it's not affecting you because you're fortunate enough that you make a wage where these things don't affect you, this is the reality for a lot of people in Michigan. And it would be a good idea for our state legislature to take a hard look at all these things, no matter what side they sit on.
Voters in Michigan will have the chance to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes in November. Should they approve Proposal 1?
I would support it so long as we have some regulation on age requirements and restrictions and things like that, just like we do for drinking. I can see an economic benefit to legalizing marijuana. We talked about fixing the roads. I don't know. Could we tax it and use that to fix the roads? I don't know. Maybe that's an idea. I'm sure that's an idea that some other people have, too. I think anything that can bring some economic incentive to Michigan is worthwhile.
Proposal 2, the redistricting reform. Do you support that?
Sure do. If you look at my district, I say to people, you know, on the campaign trail that I talk to, pretty sure my district is very gerrymandered. Albion's cut out of it. Battle Creek City's cut out of it. Kalamazoo City's cut out of it. Those are urban areas. I think that when you group, you know, all rural areas together, you're going to, you know, have one outcome versus another most of the time. So I really do think we need to take a look at making districts cut a little more fair so that both sides have an opportunity when the vote comes to, you know, have some play in the game.
On the other hand, you know, to play devil's advocate on that, you know, it would be pretty tough to include much more in the 60th district, which is mostly the city of Kalamazoo.
It is, yep.
And so, you know, and of course, one of the things they say in the redistricting regulations they have is communities of interest. People who live in the city of Kalamazoo presumably have common interests. People who live in rural areas presumably have common interests. I mean, you know, are you going to force people in rural and urban areas to coexist?
I think we do coexist, whether we like it or not. We all live here, right? And Kalamazoo is unique, too, because there's a population in Kalamazoo that's been drawn in by the Kalamazoo Promise that's very diverse. So I'm not sure Kalamazoo is really, you know, the best example when we're talking about redistricting, just because it is a very unique community in Michigan. I don't know many other communities like Kalamazoo in Michigan. And I say that coming from the east side of the state and having seen, you know, some communities out there and coming here and having been in Grand Rapids. Kalamazoo really is very unique. I think, though, so, like, my district has a weird, like, cut through Kalamazoo Township and Comstock Township. I don't know if there's a more sensible way maybe we could divide these territories and not cut, like, in between certain areas, too, which also makes it really confusing when you're trying to campaign. You know, one side of the street, you know, the odd numbers are in that district and the even numbers are in this district. Just from a practicality standpoint, for people who are running for office, it'd be nice if the districts were a little bit more clean the way they're drawn so that we can really talk to all our constituents and make sure we don't miss anybody.
And Proposal 3, the Voting Access Initiative.
I like it. My husband is a vet. He's in the military. He's going to get deployed again in January, we've been told. So I would like, you know, for especially I like that military piece in there, recognizing, you know, that these people still have a right to our government and to make decisions for us.
Can a Democrat win in the 63rd district?
I'm going to say, yeah, I think we can. You know what? I'm going to give it my all and try my best. And I think when people talk to me, they realize that I'm really logical and I'm really open to talking to people, even if they don't agree with me. And I'm really happy to share ideas and rethink my ideas based on things that people say to me and things that people ask me to look into. So if that's the kind of person that they want, you know, given a vote in the legislature, then I think that I can win.
You do know that history indicates that it's a pretty strong Republican district.
Oh, it's very strong Republican. I'm sure my opponent thinks he's going to have no problem with this vote. But, you know, people get comfortable, and I don't think it's a good thing to be comfortable when it comes to politics. I'm going to be very honest. I did not think that Donald Trump was going to win the presidency. I really didn't. I walked into work the next day and I was like, I don't even know what's going on in my life right now. I really felt like that for a minute. So stranger things have happened than a Democrat winning the 63rd.
Jen Aniano is the Democratic candidate for State House in the 63rd District. That includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.